Hi everyone. Before we get started, I'd like to mention that this episode contains language and discussion around school shootings that some listeners might find graphic. Please consider checking out a different episode if this isn't something you're on board with. With that being said, let's get into the conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to For the Curious and Confused, a podcast for people who want to understand different perspectives of the world through the people who inhabit it. I'm your host, Dominic Taggart, and today I'm joined by Daniel Jelizneski. Daniel is a retired U.S. Secret Service lieutenant with over 24 years of service, where he spent time in the Canine Bomb Detection Unit, served on protection forces for presidents and their families, and is a crime scene search technician. After retiring from federal service in 2013, Daniel became the emergency management coordinator for Pinellas County Schools in Florida, where he led safety planning for over 140 schools and 100,000 students. He recently published a book on active shooting training titled The First 5 Minutes, School Shooting Survival Guide for Administrators and Teachers. In today's conversation, we'll talk about the real-world complexity of keeping schools safe, not just from active shooters, but from fires, bomb threats, and systematic failures in training and policy. We'll hear about the myths that dominate school safety conversations, the bad training practices that have somehow become the norm, and what does make a difference, both physically and psychologically, for teachers and students alike. So, Daniel, thank you for sharing your time today, and I'm excited for our conversation.
Yes, thank you, Don. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
So I think to get us started, could you give us a two-minute introduction into who Daniel is and what motivates him?
2 minutes. Okay, well, we can start with Secret Service. Actually, I want to say fell into that because I was just doing odd jobs. I always liked law enforcement, even when I was a kid. And I did try once. It's a longer story. I did try once and found out that I was underweight, believe it or not. And they wouldn't hire me because I was my weight was too low, even though I tried to bulk up my metabolism going through. Didn't work out. So I waited. And I did some other jobs. Still thinking, I'm in my 30s, and I'm thinking, I got to have some kind of career. So I found out that their maximum age was 34, and I think I was 32 at the time. And I said, well, let me go back and see what happens. And it was very beneficial. It happened that way that I was able to get in. And surprisingly, you know, today's world, I stayed for 24 years. You just don't get that nowadays. Most people will change jobs. And when I retired, I was going to retire, live on a beach, have a beer. That was it. I'm down here in Florida, perfect. And after about 3 months being an alpha personality, it's like, oh my God, I got to do something. And this job opened up, and it's actually the county's Pinellas County here in Florida. And I'm thinking, Florida, there's no kids down here. It's all old people down here. That's where they go to retire. I was completely wrong. You know, very dense county, 100,000 kids. And it fit my resume, go in, get hired, slap a book on my desk and say, okay, you got it. And I had no direction. All they said was make our school safe. I had no idea what the heck was going on. So fortunately, they let me go. I didn't have autonomy, which was bad because I couldn't go and say, you know, close that door, put that lock. I didn't have that power, which bothered me. Had to go through a whole steps like bureaucracy. But anyway, stayed there for 4 years until after Marjorie Stoneman Douglas down here in Florida on the other side of the county on the East Coast. And after that, I thought that, you know, it's hard. It's sad to say, but it's kind of like an ambulance chasing kind of job. When things go bad, things were good for that industry. You know, it's just like anything, because you have marketers that'll go out after a tragedy and they'll obviously bombard you with, oh, if you had this system, that wouldn't have happened. And they're out there to sell things. So it's kind of bad in that security realm that when bad things happen, then the money starts pouring in. Hey, make us safe, make us safer. Florida didn't do that. Florida said, all right, we'll make you safer, but we're going to take it away from the citizens or civilians, excuse me. And we're going to give it to the police. Excuse me. So they designated that police now will do the coverage for security and safety of the schools. And I completely disagreed with that. Even though I was former law enforcement, we are a reactive force. We are not a proactive force. Don't have the time to do that. You go and take care of what's going on. You don't have the time to just take over here and do lectures and, you know, go to schools and figure this out. So that's why I left. And after I left, I just did some podcasts, and then Uvalde, Texas happened, which we all know that was just a complete disaster with the police response. And my wife said, look, you got to—
Could you give us a summary of that real quick for any listeners?
Yeah, Uvalde, Texas was a middle school that, or was it elementary school? I'm sorry. I think it was an elementary school. And it was in a very rural area, very small community, very small school. I don't think they had more than, 100 students. And it just was a series of things that happened there that was bad. One of them was apparently the security guard there had stepped out. I don't know if he stepped out for a cigarette or stepped out for another reason. One of the doors that the entry doors was unlocked so they could get in. Once this person did get in, he got into the room and just started, I'm sorry, killing kids. And the police responded. However, there was no overseer, meaning there was no person like a watch commander, a person in charge to say, this is what we're going to do. So more and more police kept coming. Now, apparently they did approach the door and tried to get in the door. And of course, the shooter, shot at the door and they backed away. At this point, the police in their mind were thinking it's a hostage situation. It wasn't. These kids in there were texting that, hey, come and save us. But, we don't want to die. I mean, they're begging for help. And the police just stood there. I think it was 45 minutes, might have been longer, that they just stood there and waited for, I don't know what they were waiting for. I really don't. My training, I went through the training. I don't care if it's one person, two, three. It used to be you used to wait at least a minimum of three. Now the training is, I don't care if it's one, you go. You go and stop the killing. That's the main thing you're going to do. You go and stop the killing. I don't care whatever happens. You want to save those kids. That didn't happen. Finally, I think they said Border Patrol SWAT team finally decided we're going. And they went in and killed this person. So that just was horrible. You had parents outside the school screaming at the police saying, I'll go in. If you're not going to go in, I want my kids in there. I want to go in. They would push them away. I mean, the city, the liability, civil liability is in the millions, obviously. They've paid out money. They will not take any blame. Anyway, it just was horrible. And it just got me. I was so upset. I just said, I got to write a book. I have to write a book. And it's not much of a book. It's only 77 pages. It was a guidebook. I did not want a 200 or 300 page diatribe sitting on a shelf collecting dust and going through all these hundreds of pages. No, I wanted an easy read, a teacher, anybody could grab that, get the basic information, how to keep yourself safe. That's it. That's it. That's all it was. I mean, and it's just something that's, I want to make it simple because if you start, there's a lot of stuff out there, you probably heard it called EdgeSpeak, because they will give a whole lecture about nothing. And afterwards, you're like, I didn't get 5 minutes of what they were talking about. I have no idea what they just said. I wanted it simple. This is what you have to do in procedure wise. So that's the reason I wrote the book. Again, I don't come on these podcasts. I don't, you buy it or not, I don't care. I'm not on here to sell the book. Basically, I'm on here basically to sell what the procedure should be and how you should react in something like this, because there's a lot of stuff out there, Don, that's wrong. And I'm sorry, I keep going because if you have to
Keep
stop me, just
going. Keep going.
stop.
Please, I'll jump in. Keep on
More
going.
than how when were you in on the cruise? We took a cruise, the Caribbean, like 3 weeks ago. I bumped into these people that were from, where the heck were they from? Minnesota, Wisconsin, somewhere up north. And they said, oh, we're school security personnel. I said, oh, I said, I work for such and such. Oh, yeah, we're to start talking. And we were in complete disagreement. I said, oh, I said, why do you have teachers having the liability of making a decision on whether they stay in a classroom or whether they leave? Well, that's ALICE training. I don't know if you've heard the acronym ALICE. ALICE is a company, it's a
I was
marketing.
trained, I heard that, and I've totally
Yeah.
forgotten what it stands for, but I've heard the word before.
It was created by apparently a law enforcement person who is made a business out of it. The letters stand for alert, lockdown, inform, counter, and evacuate. And it's supposed to go in sequence. So when if you have an active shooter on your in your school, you would make the alert, obviously. You put it out twice. You make sure everyone hears it. Communication is big. Okay, active shooter, L is lockdown, go into a lockdown. The third part is inform. Apparently, what's supposed to happen is some designated person is supposed to go on the cameras in the school and follow this individual and tell people where this individual is going. Don, there's no, as far as I know, there's no school that has this. Yeah, you've got cameras, but you can't follow anybody. It's not like you have these, we're not in, the next century of being able to follow people wherever they go. That's not possible. Yeah, you may say, oh, he's in hallway three, and then he's gone for a while. He or she. Well, now wait, he's in hallway five. No, that doesn't work. The C is called counter. what they wanted, and it's actually, to me, it's actually laughable. They want children from, I don't care, elementary, even through high school. If it's a big if that shooter gets into the classroom, they want students and teachers precisely at the same moment to throw something at the shooter to distract them. Now, it used to be years ago, and I'm talking 10, 15 years ago in Texas, they had the kids bring soup cans into the classroom. Put the soup cans on your desk just in case that guy gets in and we're gonna throw soup cans. Are you kidding me? There are no social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists. No one in the school industry believes in this, that you should have a child throw something, an item, I don't care whatever it is, at a shooter who somehow got into the classroom. And that's the argument I have with these people. How did he get in the classroom in the first place? Because that door is supposed to be locked. There is no shooter in the history of shootings ever breached a locked door. It takes too long. We had a shooting up in Minnesota, 2005, Red Lake, Minnesota. Easy to look up. It was on a Native American reservation. The kid shot his grandfather's girlfriend, had a shotgun, goes to the school that he was, at one time attended. It was a middle school, shot the security guard. He sees a teacher down the hallway and starts chasing her. She runs into the classroom, locks the door. He shot with a shotgun that door three times. That door didn't budge. Nothing. He went around the corner and there's a window. Well, he broke that and went through the window and shot people, but the door itself did not budge. So my whole thing about this ALICE training, because they will show videos on it. I have videos on it of people doing the practice. There'll be somebody in the classroom running up and down the aisles of the desks, screaming and stuff. You did all this stuff to me. It's like, how did they get in there in the first place? How did they possibly get in? They can't. If that door is locked, they're not going to do it. Perfect example. You had a Nashville shooting. In Nashville, you had that person come to the glass doors. They shot out the doors. They walk in. You see them going to the doors of the classroom, locked and move on. Locked, move on. Open, they go in. They have a clock in their head. They are not going to take time to sit there and just shoot out a lock. Now, these people who do this ALICE training will say, well, yeah, I've had them go in because they were targeted. Whoa. A targeted shooting is so different than a school shooting. If you target someone, if I'm mad at X, if I'm mad at Mr. Jones, whoever, yeah, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get to Mr. Jones. But I'm not in there spraying everybody I can think of. That's not a targeted shooting. So this idea for ALICE that you're going to, number one, get in the classroom, and number two, you're going to have kids throw something at a shooter in like the most traumatic incident they're ever going to experience and possibly hit this person. Even I don't care, even if you throw a desk at them or a fire extinguisher, what's going to happen, Don? They're going to be pissed off. They're going to start shooting even more. I mean, what are you doing? So the last part is evacuate, which again, I disagree with. Look, I try to put myself in place of a teacher. They got the toughest jobs in the world. Even now, it's even tougher because of the pandemic. If I'm a teacher in a classroom and I hear we've got a school shooter, active shooter on campus, that door of the classroom's already locked. I emphasize during class time, the door should already be locked. Teachers complain, oh, they got to go to the bathroom. It's tough. Keep that door locked at all the time. You're already one step ahead. For a lockdown, normal lockdown, door locked, lights off, kids sit on the floor, blinds are closed, silence your phone. You don't open that door for anybody. You do not listen to any announcements. You wait for the good guys. The only ones that can open that door are people with keys. Yeah, is it possible you can grab a hostage and get a key? Possible, but why would they take all that effort to do that? An administrator or police officer is going to have that key and open it and say, hey, we're safe, we're all set. Otherwise, you sit and wait. And even if they tell me, hey, we saw the gunman, he's in the other building, we can evacuate. No, I'm supposed to believe this one person that possibly saw a gunman in another building. Where am I going? Why am I evacuating? I'm in the safest place possible. They're not getting into the classroom, the door is locked. And the other thing is, even if it's possible, they stay at that door and possibly take the time to try to break through it. I got a heavy ass desk. I'm going to go and block that door so they're not getting in. They're not getting in. I don't care what it takes, but they're not getting in. Now, if these dumb architects did something stupid where the door opens out, yeah, then you got trouble. But that door better be so you open it, it opens in so you can block that door. So, this idea, number one, that it's okay to evacuate. No, it's not. I'm not going to take 25 to 30 small children. And I guarantee you, Don, maybe 10% of those kids are going to freeze and they're not going anywhere. Or you're going to have kids say, hey, my dad's a police officer. He said we stay in the room or it's in the military or my whatever. So I'm going to take 25 to 30 kids and possibly usher them out into the worst war zone they're going to see. Blood, sounds, screaming, and get them to an exit where it may be right there. More than likely, it's down the other end of the hallway. So think, if everybody does that, what's going to happen to that exit? They're going to pile up there like a funnel, and you're just going to have screaming kids out there doing what? And the odd thing for me, what's also laughable, during the drills, they'll do this. Okay, kids, we're going to evacuate because we're pretending there's a shooter out there. And what are they doing? They're walking. Nice. And we're going to walk here just like a fire drill. No. In the chaos of an active shooter drill or active shooter event, you're going to hear unbelievable stuff, screaming. And I'm not going to bring kids out to that. What for? I don't get this idea of you should evacuate. There's absolutely no reason to evacuate from a safe room. None. Yeah, you can get hypothetical if, what ifs, what if? You can what if it to death? What if there's a fire? What if there's smoke? What if there's, no. 99% of the time, you're okay in that room. There's no reason to leave that room. You wait. It's okay to wait. Yeah, could you have a few hours? Absolutely. Elementary school is great because the ones I've got, they all got bathrooms. And you know what? If you don't, grab a freaking bucket. I mean, tough. You're alive, aren't you? And you know what? The other thing is, you stay quiet. I've had middle school. You've gone through middle school. It's a lot different now. Middle school now is like the hormones are going. They can't shut up. So I've had middle school during a drill, and they're yada-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I had a former NYPD officer who was a school police officer there, the security officer, and he went in there and read them the Riot Act. I mean, this was like the greatest thing. He just went in there and he's screaming at them. He says, do you think I want to go to your parents and tell them you got shot and killed because you couldn't keep your mouth shut during an active shooter drill? He says, think about that for a minute. I mean, it just, there's no, why are you talking? What are you doing? I want to make sure when that shooter goes through, they don't know where anybody is, as if the school is completely closed down. I've gone through elementary schools, and I love elementary schools because number one, these kids listen. They're not naive, but they'll listen and they want to do a good job. They'll listen to the teacher, they want to do a good job. I've gone through schools, Don, where you think they're closed. You go to every door, I don't hear a sound. I would practice, pretend that I'm a shooter. I'm banging on the door and all this stuff. You don't hear a peep. And then afterwards, we go and we're unlocking the doors. You'll designate people to unlock the doors. And one teacher, there might have been a couple more than one, but one of them had 25 kids jam-packed into the bathroom. They're piled on top of each other and closed the door. I said, you did a great job. I said, now you got double barriers. And these kids came out and they're beaming. And I said, you guys are going to get a double gold star. I said, whatever it takes. And they are happy that they did it. They know that they have to be safe. I mean, they are not stupid. I had a school, I got plenty of stories. Anyways, I had a school that was an open area school, meaning when you come in, it's like a huge area in the center, and the classroom's like in a round, and it's two floors. On the second floor, you go up to the second floor, and there's five classrooms like in a U shape. And the double doors had to be locked during an active shooter incident. So I would go in, I asked the teacher, I said, well, who's designated to do that? She says, I am. And I said, do you have a plan B if you're not here? Yeah, Mrs. So-and-so. And I asked the kids, I said, well, what if Mrs. Jones here like passes out or faints? And all these kids, fifth graders, are raising it. I know where the key is. I know where the key is. Okay, let's go. I had the whole class come out into the hallway. It was in the fire extinguisher box. They all took the key and they went and locked the double doors and came back in. I said, you guys are heroes. I said, if your teacher goes down, you know what to do. They're not naive. I had the same, not same type of school, not the same exact school. We're doing a drill and the principal goes, I'm going to try to trick them. I'm going to try to trick them. So he gets a bullhorn. He goes into the middle of the area. And on the bullhorn, he says, the drill's over. Everybody came out back to school. Come on, drill's over. All the senior teachers knew it was a trick. They didn't do anything. Had two substitutes there. And they said, okay, take your books out and stuff. And the kids go, no, it's a trick. We're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to listen to any announcements. So they are not They're not dumb. They're not naive. They know what's going on. So this idea, because I get it from parents, oh my God, these drills, they cause anxiety, they cause stress. No, they don't. They don't. These kids know what they're doing. They've been with this their whole lives. It's not, yes. Is it a pain in the ass? Yes, because you're going to take a minimum an hour, and high school is even longer. High school is a 2-hour minimum to go through these drills. But I emphasize stay in a lockdown. Stay in a lockdown. There's no reason to come out of a lockdown. Really, no reason. Anyway, I'll
That's like
stop.
that's
It has questions.
a,
Otherwise,
a
I'll
lot
keep
there.
going.
Yeah, a lot there. Yeah, I think we touched on a lot of these important aspects, but I think maybe to direct and distill some of this a little bit.
Sure.
What do you think are the biggest shortcomings currently in how public schools approach this emergency management? I think you've said a lot of this already, but maybe in terms of
Okay.
a bit of a more diluted form of this, and
Yeah,
what are we doing
absolutely.
wrong? What are we doing wrong here?
Well, you know what happens, Don, if you have something in a, I don't care if it's elementary, middle, or high school, the parents themselves, even if it's like next door or something, hey, next PTA meeting or whatever, we got to do something. What are you doing? They're asking administrators, principals. The easiest thing is what they're doing is they'll get federal funds or even state funds or a grant to say, okay, we'll put in metal detectors. Phew, we're done. We're safe. No. Metal detectors, Don, are what they call security theater. Looks good. Think about it. If I'm a crazy, insane person, you think a metal detector is going to stop me from going in there and shooting people up? It's not going to do anything. And it's costly. It's maintenance. It's training people. It slows down kids coming in. And you know what? It's not foolproof. You got kids coming in with all kinds of stuff. Just, I mean, come on. Look when you go to the airport, what TSA is doing. It's basically like that. You're going to get something through. And the other thing is, Don, talking about that, it's not a myth, but it is something to be concerned about, is the doors being wedged open. I can go to any high school today and get in. That's not an issue. There's always going to be a door wedged open. Why? Because you got teachers going out for a smoke, kids ordering a pizza. One of your buddies is late for class. And I'll wedge the door open. Come on in. I'll get you in. It happens all the time. And don't you think these people that are shooters don't notice that? Every one of these shooters, as you've seen, Don, is either a former student or a current student. They know the layout of the school. They know when people are going. They know which doors are wedged open. Every one of them, Cruz, the one in Marjory Stoneman Douglas, was a student there. Now, you got to be kidding me. He brings an AR-15 in an Uber. And I mean, what did the Uber driver think? It was a violin? What did he think? Gets out of the car, goes into this. I mean, come on, where's common sense? A lot of it is just common sense. I mean, yes, I understand a lot of these security guards backed away, and I'm not getting paid for this. I'm not going in to get shot up and stuff, but I'm sorry. That's your job. That is your job. When I was with the Secret Service, that was my job. Come on, I'm there to protect the president. We give up our lives for something like that. We went through the training for school shootings. You go. You go. I mean, there's no if, and, or but. You just go. So, anyways, I'm sorry we were talking about the myths. One of them is this Alice kind of training, this marketing, this kind of stuff, which puts the emphasis and liability on the teachers. So that teacher's got to make a split second decision. Not being trained in this area, they're not former military or police. They have to make a split second decision to save themselves and 25 to 30 kids on whether to evacuate or stay in the classroom. I'm not putting that on a teacher. No, why would I do that? Why would I put, they're enough stress already. Now they got to think about this. Forget it. I'm not doing that. So that's called options-based training. And there's another one called run, hide, fight that's out there also, but that's for businesses. And that's another one that does not belong in schools at all. So I disagree with any of that stuff. I'm old school. Stay in a lockdown. There's no reason to get out of that. But anyways, the other thing that probably it's not a myth, but most people think they're safe because of things. Metal detectors, cameras. Oh, AI is going to help us. Yeah, maybe down the road, maybe 20, 30 years from now, AI, there may be just AI teachers, might not even have human teachers. Who knows? But yeah, this idea that, okay, if we do X, it's going to make us safer. No, the only thing that's going to make you safer is training and drilling your people. It's humans that make it. Because, yeah, will you have human error? Yeah. But I'm not going to have a system of a camera and depend on that. There are cameras out there. I will tell you, there's a company out there, and of course, off the top of my head, I can't think. They will use your existing cameras to look at a parking lot or whatever outside and be able to see if that individual is carrying a gun. However, the gun has to be exposed. It can't see through clothing. That's the caveat. So that it's good in one sense, but on the other sense, it's not. So if it's hidden in your clothes, you're not going to see it. So really, to me, it's for that much amount of money you're going to spend on it, it's a waste. But that's the other myth, that there's stuff out there that's going to help us. No, train your people correctly, and it'll work much better if they know what to do during a drill. And the other thing is the not quantity, but the timing of it. A lot of people say, oh, biannual, twice a year, once a year, every quarter. I like every quarter. It keeps you up, it keeps you going, because you don't want to overtrain. And that's the other thing. If you start overtraining, people just get bored. You get tired of it. I got tests I got to do. Teachers are under enough pressure as it is. Now you're going to throw this on them again, because I tell you, I've done it at all these schools, and every time people just groan. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's my next question. Do you feel like people don't take this seriously
It's
in a kind of a
happened. It
day-to-day
happened.
context?
Yes, you do have people that, if they're former military, former police, obviously they want more training. The regular teachers, they want less, because it takes away from teaching. And as you know, our schools here in Florida are graded, the teachers are graded, the kids are graded. So if you've got a D or an F school, the principal's already putting pressure on to bring that school up a level. Teachers are under pressure to get the kids' grades up. So it's testing, it's homework, it's whatever it is to bring these grades up. And now you're going to put the extra burden of this school safety stuff. And they're human. You want to get it over with. I've had it where, see, if you announce when the training's going to be, that's even worse. Because let's say, hey, Tuesday, 1 o'clock, we're doing a school safety. We're going to do an active shooter drill. Okay. Well, Tuesday, about, an hour before, they already got the blinds down and lights off. Kids are sitting on the floor and you're looking at your watch. Let's get this over with. I got homework to do. So, yes, there are times when you do not take it seriously. And that's going to hurt you, because during a real one, you're going to panic. Now, again, I'm not on here to sell the book, but in the book, I did come up with a credit card size card. And of course, now I can't find it. There it is. Sorry, Don.
No
I
worries.
know we're not on camera, but it's a credit card size quick reference card. And what I did was I made it up. You can put it on your lanyard, because everybody's got a lanyard with a copier or a lanyard with your name on it. And it just is going to tell you, because I'm a police officer, so I've been through this training. I've done, even though you still are going to get anxious, your stomach is going to start churning. When stuff like this happens, you're going to forget your name. You're going to freeze. You're just going to blank. Nobody knows how they're going to react. No one knows. So at least if you do go into a lockdown, you can look at the card and say, oh, gee, I forgot to turn the lights off, or I forgot to silence my phone. At least it's something where you can look at and you can say, oh, okay, I got it all. Because again, unless you're drilling constantly, which, in the Secret Service, we were drilling constantly, you're going to forget stuff. It's just going to happen. And, number one, as you know, even when the shots are fired, unless I tell teachers, go to a gun range, listen to what it sounds like. Because I tell you, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be like, that's firecrackers, car backfiring. That can't be gunshots. That's your first thing, is denial. Everyone does it. We all do it. If you hear something like that, what is that? That can't be gunshots. You're just in denial. You don't want to accept the fact that this possibly could be happening. And then when it does, hopefully you go into another mode that I got to do this. Or you're like, you panic. There was a school, a middle school north of me, Pasco County. I knew the assistant principal there. They had a real active shooter happening. Across the street from them, there was a kid who didn't like his mom's boyfriend. So he grabbed a gun and he started shooting up the house. Well, he started spraying, and one of the bullets hit the school. They go into a lockdown, which they should have done. So now it's a real lockdown. Nothing else happened. Nobody else got hurt. Police got there, captured the kid. Nobody got hurt. So you always do an after action at the school, after, whether it's a drill or a real one. In the after action, she finds out that one third of her teachers froze, did nothing. And these were senior people who had gone through these drills numerous times. You don't know how people are going to react. So again, this idea of evacuating or thinking things through, no. Stay in a lockdown. You don't have to think about anything. You're safe. The good guys are coming. The other thing I always mention is school resource officers. Down here in Florida, they at least got the money, because it's always about money, of having school resource officers in elementary, middle, and high school. If it gets up to over 1,000 students in high school, they'll get two school resource officers, and they are armed. They are not there to arrest people. They are not there to harass people. They are there as a, they are a bridge between students, parents, and administration. They are there to keep you safe. And during this Black Lives Matter crap, excuse me, when this defund police movement came out, these kids were like, oh no, I don't want to see a uniform that I create, you know, I need a safe space. Give me a break. It was the parents actually who came back and said, no, I want these school resource officers back in place. I want my kids to be safe. These people want to do the job. They go through intense training. They're very good at it. They volunteer for this stuff. This is not something that they're a Walmart greeter. They go through training and they like what they do. And these kids love them. So I always emphasize that. Number one, you keep yourself safe before you help anybody else. Do not be a hero. It's happened numerous times. It happened in Nashville, what, Iowa. It happened at the club down here in Orlando, Sandy Hook. It happened. These teachers, unarmed, go out and they try to confront the shooter or talk them down. You're too late at that point. 6 months ago, you should have been talking to this person. Not now. Their mind is, they're at the end. They're already at the end point. They're not listening to you. So keep yourself safe. Do not tell me, oh, I'm going to go out there and talk. No, you're not going home. What are you doing? Common sense. Just make yourself safe. Secondly, school resource officers, you get them into the schools, you're one step ahead. They are going. They are trained to go and take care of this and stop this from happening. So those are my two main points about this whole thing.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the about police not being the correct entity for
Reactive.
for doing that. So could you talk a little bit about, I think we kind of got into this a little bit with the resource officers, but what is the hierarchy like of civilian school protection? And in terms of, because you also mentioned earlier the that shooting where the police just weren't going in because there was no kind of centralized decision maker type of thing. So
Exactly.
what does an ideal hierarchy look like and how it's executed from a administrator or like active protective staff type of perspective?
Yes, good point. If you do not have school resource officers, excuse me, then you do want to have contact and you want to have that liaison. Every police department should have a liaison with the schools, one way or another. That's the person who sets up the drills so they go through. And on these drills, Don, you do not want to bring in blanks or explosives or something that, you know, scares the hell out of people. You don't need that. You don't need to do that. Just make the drills as realistic as possible and as I like to say, unscheduled as possible. It's sometimes it's not possible to do something unscheduled, but that's the only way you're going to find out how people react. If you do when it's scheduled, people, of course, you know, they're going to be perfect. I want to be perfect. Anyway, the difference between having the police there is difficult because they will do drills at certain points, and usually it's off school time at a, you know, abandoned building or something like that. But you want that liaison because you don't, and the other thing that happens, and I'm sorry, I get a little off topic, but you've heard of swatting where someone will call in, hey, there's an active shooter at you know, the Jones School or whatever. And here they come, you know, going like crazy. And they show up and everybody's like, what the hell is going on? All you do is make a phone call. Where's the liaison? Call the school. What's going on? We got nothing going on. You know, I mean, don't just you don't just show up, but you know. You know, I was a cop. You get the adrenaline, go, let's go, we gotta go. It's like, you know, like TV or something, like you're in a movie. No, call the school, use some common sense. So anyway, the only thing is between educators and law enforcement, like I said, it's like blood and water. It's two different aspects. You know, you have educators who, you know, they've gone through their, you know, PhD, doctorate, master's, whatever, you know, and these thinking cops, the blue collar cops, it's blue collar, white collar difference. And that does run into an issue. So basically it's about customer service. Just talk to people, tell them what you want to do. This is the procedure. This is all we want to do. You don't want to make people scared, number one. You just want them to be aware of what's going on and the procedures you need to take, the steps you need to take. That's all. So it's if you've got a school resource officer, it's even better because now they're liaison and they can talk to you and figure out how things go. So it's just you get your staff together. Any kind of training, you're going to have principal, assistant principal, definitely your HPO. A big person that's left out of this is your head plant operator. They got the keys. You want them in these meetings. And the other thing is, they know that school layout than anybody else in that whole school. They know that school. So you want them in these meetings. your school resource officer or police, if you've got a social worker or psychologist, even better to get in these meetings to set up how you're going to do these drills. The other thing that's important now that's just come out a few years ago is a threat assessment team. Your threat assessment team is going to have files. And I'm sorry, we get into civil rights areas, but they are going to have files on certain students who have either made threats, look like they're going to make threats, or just their personality has just completely changed. What's happening with Johnny? What is going on with these people? And they'll have their meeting every week, and you'll talk about what's going on with them. And you sit down with them, figure out what's going on, someone they trust, and figure it out. Because if you stay one step ahead of it, then you're going to be able to figure it out. And the same thing, I understand it's a cliche, but see something, say something. If you've got a kid who can say, "Hey, I don't know what's going on with my buddy, but he's dressing weird. I don't understand. He's got drawings. He's got this. I've seen his internet page." You got to say something, and you're not snitching. Because you don't want that. It's your school. Get ownership in your school. Speak up. Talk to people. Talk to a mentor, this SRO, whoever that you trust, and talk to them because it's all in confidence and they will take care of it. It's happened numerous times where they've come in and talked and said something happened. The police went to the house. Oh my God, they find, caches of guns and the internet stuff. And just, there are people still out, people, there are kids still out there that, want to copy Columbine, and they'll tell you, "Oh, I want to do the same thing to Columbine." What? That was years ago. Or what? How can these kids be heroes? But that happens because, and again, we're not. I'm sorry, we're getting into the different subjects, but the mental health crisis here is pretty bad. And you've gone through this with this social media, the idea that these phones are attached to you at the hip, like you're an alcoholic. Social media, the Instagram, whatever, Snapchat, whatever, there's all something new out there all the time. But the bullying, now it's cyberbullying 24 hours a day. And these kids, after a while, girls especially, the suicide rate, boys especially, after a while, you just can't take it. And there's nowhere to turn because the mental health here, I mean, it's not my forte, but you just see it. And I'm sure you've seen it where it happens, where the pressure and the stuff with all social media. And I'm really glad, not only in Florida, but I think in New York, right? I can't, there's a couple other states. I don't know if California will do it. Take the phones away. Start at the elementary. Now, you can't go to high school tomorrow. I'm taking your phone away. No, it doesn't work that way. Start low, start at elementary school. Then as they go on, they don't need it. And I don't know if you've seen it, but there are studies out there that shows the kids are more focused, their grades are better. And you know what? They start talking to each other. They're not texting to the guy across the room. They're actually talking to each other face to face. And that's a good thing.
Definitely. Yeah, especially the talking part. I think, yeah, we're just so caught up now in assuming that that's the main method of communication now, and that's a problem, I think, overall. Yeah. Well, this has been really awesome. I think we've heard a lot about bad practices and kind of how to address some of those. So I'm kind of curious, what is to kind of wrap up here, what is a piece of advice that is important to you, either in this realm of the emergency management or more broadly, anything that a piece of advice is important to you that you could leave with
You
us?
know what? You know what, Don, is important to me is it old school, old days used to be the family would sit down at dinner and talk about what's happening. Those days are gone. Most parents are working two jobs. Kids are doing all kinds of activities. However, I always emphasize the parents talk to your kids. And when I say talk to them, get 30 seconds, a minute, whatever, because most of the time they're on their phone running upstairs, but I got things to do. Sit them down and just say, "How are you running the emergency drills at your school? How are they running the active shooters drills? Tell me exactly what you're doing. Are you staying in the classroom? Are you evacuating? Are they, for God forbid, telling you to throw things at people?" If any of that happens and you get that gut feeling, that's a red flag. You got to find out what's going on. So as a parent today, don't just ignore it. Don't just think, "I'm dropping my kid off. You're good. See you later. I got to go to work." Doesn't happen that way anymore. You have to find out. Now, yes, active shooters, school shootings, is it like being struck by lightning? Absolutely. 99% of the time, it's not going to happen. I want people prepared. So I want parents to talk to their kids from elementary through high school. Just ask, what happens when there's an active shooter drill? What are you doing? Are you leaving the classroom, throwing things? Anything like that throws up a red flag. You're like, "No. Go to the school board. You got what, 3 minutes? Read a page and a half in 3 minutes," because I've done it. You can read pretty fast. If that doesn't happen, you got legislatures you can go to. Now, the school, as you know, They're going to circle the wagons because they don't want any fault. They're not going to, they don't want to get blamed for this. Then go to your legislature and say, I don't agree with this. Worst case scenario, you got to pull them out. And it's happened. They'll get the homeschool, they'll send them to private school, whatever. They disagree with what's happening there. So you got to talk to your kids and find out what's going on.
Step one, open
Yeah,
communication. Yep, have that
absolutely.
said in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Yes.
definitely. Great, thank you. All right, everybody. So go check out Daniel's book, The First 5 Minutes, School Shooting Survival Guide for Administrators and Teachers. Daniel, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Don. Thank you very much.